Good morning, everyone. My name is Ben Riga. I'm a technical evangelist with Microsoft. I work in a group called Developer and Platform Evangelism, and my focus is exclusively Windows Phone. Please feel free to email me. My job is to make sure that your apps get published, and so if there's something blocking you from publishing and you can't get the answers from the forums or from Bing or from wherever, then please let us know. I know there's actually a really strong local team as well, but if for whatever reason you need help and you can't get it, please let me know. It's my job. You can follow me at Twitter as well. And then also that last URL at the bottom, I recently started a podcast which is exclusively focused on helping developers who are building Windows phones with best practices around developing of Windows phones, higher quality Windows phone apps, and also publishing and maybe even a little bit of the marketing. So that making sure that in the end that you get top ranked and hopefully make a lot more money. I mentioned Twitter. I should mention that if you don't follow me on Twitter, there is a problem, and the puppy's going to get it. So please, I encourage you to follow me on Twitter. If you prefer to message me on Twitter, please feel free. My Twitter account is at Ben Riga, and so please go ahead and follow me. So in terms of what we're going to talk about today, there's a few things. I'm going to spend maybe 10 or 15 minutes giving you an overview of where we are with Windows Phone from a marketplace perspective, not so much from the consumer, but from a developer perspective, so you have an idea of how things are going, which, small hint, is pretty good. But we'll just spend maybe 15 minutes on that, and then we'll dive into some of the more interesting stuff, which is I'll spend about 45 minutes talking about Windows Phone 7.5 Refresh, which is the latest release that we just recently had. There's a consumer perspective there, but also there's some interesting stuff that you should know as a developer for Windows 7.5 Refresh, and so we'll give you some guidance there as well. And then I think we're going to take a very short break to grab some more coffee, make sure I didn't put you to sleep. And then when you come back, there's some interesting stuff that's related to Windows 7.5 Refresh, and so I'm going to give you some additional help on how you can get farther in that. First thing we'll talk about is optimization of apps. Around performance optimization, if you're having any sort of performance issues, I'll help you understand some of the tools that are available to help you fix that, as well as perhaps memory issues if you're having that. So we'll talk about that in performance optimization. And then one of the things that Refresh gives us is more consumers that you can sell to. And so we'll spend an hour or so talking about localization and how you can take your apps to additional markets. And then finally, we'll spend some time on the marketplace, how to publish, and what some of the information related to publishing, and also give you some tips on what are some of the best things that you can do to optimize the revenue that you're making or to optimize the impact that you're having with your apps. How's that sound? Does that sound like what you were looking for? Really quiet. All I can hear is crickets. Robert says okay. So please don't be shy. If you have questions, just raise your hand. Can you guys do that? Yes? No? Okay. So it's going to be really quiet today. I get a sense that I'm going to be talking to myself, maybe. Okay. So let's talk about Windows Phone and Marketplace. First things first, I think we can all agree that the reviews for Windows Phone have been astounding. I mean, they're just across the board. Reviewers love them. End users love them. Analysts love it. It's just, as an operating system, it's doing extremely well, which is great. But let's focus a little bit more on what developers should be thinking about. And the first thing here is, this is a survey that was done recently by PC Magazine in the US, and they do a survey every year. They call it their Reader's Choice Awards, where they talk about many different categories. But in the smartphone category, Windows Phone actually is pretty much neck and neck with Apple iOS and way ahead of Android in terms of satisfaction of end users, which is a good thing because that means that consumers are happy with the device, which means there's going to be more consumers buying more apps and so on. The other thing that's important is that we're starting to see a lot of momentum around the platform in terms of what top apps are available. And I'm not going to read all these. I'm not going to quiz you on them. You don't have to take notes on these. But I think if you look at the names here, you'll see pretty much a who's who of what are the top apps around mobile. And so that gives you a pretty good idea that At this point, we're quite happy with where we are in terms of getting all the various top apps that consumers would expect to have on a device. So let's talk specifically about the catalog and what apps are available in the catalog. Right now, and these numbers are dated, when I left the US, this is the numbers that were available. We were at about 76,000 published apps in the marketplace. I know that recently I saw a blog post where we've actually said publicly that we're now over 80,000. And the reason we can say that is because of the number in the top right there, which is the new apps that we're getting every single day. Right now, and this is a rolling average over a 4-week period, we're getting on average about 315 apps a day that developers are publishing, which is fantastic. And that means obviously the growth of the marketplace is going extremely well. There's lots of numbers up here, but there's a few that I think are most interesting to developers. These two are probably the most interesting. The first thing is that consumers that are using Windows Phone download a lot of apps. And I think we've done a pretty good job of making apps front and center, making the marketplace application where you can download apps very easy to use, making apps very discoverable and easy to find. And so in general, users are downloading a ton of apps, which is good. The other thing, especially if you're building paid apps, is the average selling price. On average right now, the average selling price for apps is about $2.56, which is pretty high compared to where our competitors are, especially Android, where in general, it's really hard to make money on paid apps. So in general, this is pretty good. The other thing that's really interesting is that we're somewhere around 50% of users that are on the platform have the ability to use mobile operator billing. And that's good primarily because it means, from what we've seen, it means that users will download and buy more. And I'm not really sure what the psychology is there, but in general, users that have the ability to pay for their apps on their bill, on their mobile operator bill, versus having to use a credit card, tend to spend more. And so that's an important thing, again, from a developer perspective. And right now, we have pretty good coverage, about 50%, but we're working pretty hard. We're trying to get that even higher. So stay tuned on that as we add more and more operators over time. Let's talk about the actual folks like yourselves that are actually developing for the platform. Right now, we're at, again, this is from beginning of April, we're at about 114,000 developers on the platform. Of those 114,000, almost half of them are students, which really is a really astounding number. It means that there's a lot of students that are pretty interested in the platform, and that bodes well for startups that eventually will be building apps on the platform, which is really good. Of the 114,000, 20,000 have published at least one app or more. And the other interesting number is the number of downloads that we have of the SDK. We're now well over 3 million, and that's increasing something like 46,000 downloads regularly, right? I mean, it's just going very quickly. And again, that bodes well that you need to download the SDK in order to start kicking the tires and start playing with the SDK as you start practicing and building your apps, prototyping and building your apps. And so again, that bodes well in terms of apps that are coming. And then I also have a list here of all the top apps. I'm not going to spend any time talking about that. I think most of you, especially if you're using Windows Phone, know which ones the top apps are. So that's where we are today. Where are we going in the future? And unfortunately, I don't have any numbers to share that are official Microsoft numbers. But I do have numbers from analysts that study the industry and that have a sense of where things are going across all of the various ecosystems. And right now, Of the three that have published, that's IDC, Gartner, IHS, iSupply, all of them put us in the number two position in a few years, in the year 2015, which is pretty good. Android is going to be number one, they think, and then Windows Phone will be number two, and then iOS actually will be number three in terms of ecosystems. That doesn't help you today, though, so let's talk about where we are today and what you should be thinking about in terms of targeting your apps. And this is another study done by Morgan Stanley where they've said just Nokia, we actually have a few partners that are building Windows phones, but Nokia is probably the most aggressive. And Morgan Stanley is saying that Nokia alone will ship 37 million Windows phones in 2012. That's 37 million consumers that will be waiting to download your app and pay you money to buy your app. So that's important. Now, of course, shipping phones is important. Even more important is getting those consumers to buy the apps. And so Nokia, in particular, has spent a lot of money, a lot of effort marketing Windows Phone. And this is an article from CNET magazine, CNET.com, actually, where they're showing AT&T has actually said publicly. Now, AT&T is the largest mobile operator in the United States, and they've said publicly that the Nokia Lumia 900 is actually going to be the biggest launch that they've ever done, including bigger than the iOS launch that they did way back. And so that's important. I don't have official numbers here, but I do know that the rumor is that between AT&T and Nokia and Microsoft, it's on the order of $150 million just in the US. So that bodes well in terms of making sure that those 37 million phones that get shipped actually end up in consumers' hands so that they actually start using that. So that's kind of interesting. And then the last thing that I'll talk about, and then we'll get into the more interesting technical stuff, is what developers think of the various mobile platforms. This is another third party. It's again IDC and another company called AppCelerator, and they measure regularly the interest of developers in various mobile platforms. And you can see where Android is the green one that's kind of on a decline. Primarily, we think, and AppCelerator thinks, because of the huge fragmentation problems that Android has. Because between the fragmentation problems that they have and the fact that end users typically don't want to spend money on buying apps, it's really hard to make money on Android. And so developers are, over time, I think, are starting to abandon Android. And we're starting to see that. Anecdotally, I've seen that a few times. And even more importantly for us is Windows Phone is clearly now number three with a huge trend line going way up. So that bodes well. You guys are sitting in the right room to be doing the right thing at the right time. So congratulations. Don't hurt your arm patting yourself on the back. And we're going to help you get even farther. So I think you guys already know some of this stuff. I'm going to pause here for any questions on the stuff that I just talked about. Come on, someone's going to be brave and ask the first question. No one? Okay, so that's it for the that portion of the thing. And then we're going to move on to Windows Phone 7.5 refresh. And you may have heard it referred to as Tango. That was an internal code name. But ultimately, it's called Windows Phone 7.5 refresh. I'll talk briefly about what's in there and why it's interesting from a consumer perspective. And then we're going to flip it around and look at it from the developer perspective and what are the things you need to know about 7.5 refresh. And then hopefully that will set the tone for some of the other stuff we're going to talk about later today. So in terms of objectives for Windows 7.5 refresh, the biggest one is geographic expansion. So we had a certain number of markets that we were in that actually increased from 7.0 to 7.5, and we're now going even farther, and I'll show you the numbers in a few minutes. Ultimately, we want to be in all the markets around the world that you can imagine, pretty much every market that Microsoft does business in, which is, I don't know, 190 markets around the world. Over time, we'll get there. And so this is one of the first steps that we're doing to increase the marketplace markets. The biggest one, as you can imagine, is China. China is a huge market from a phone perspective. And they're actually relatively new on the smartphone market. And so there's a huge opportunity there. And in fact, another important note is that Nokia is actually very strong in China. And so we expect to have good things there. And then we're also adding a bunch of new languages that we're going to support as part of the Windows Phone 7.5 refresh. There's a couple of empty seats in the front here as well, if you need them. There's one over here as well. Okay, so geographic expansion is probably the primary thing. In order to do that, and in order to support some of the emerging markets, we're adding some additional support for devices that have lower memory. And the reason we're doing that is because that allows us to have a lower price point. And in some of the emerging markets, that's very important. And so because we're doing that, that increases the number of consumers. And it increases the developer opportunity for you because it increases the footprint that we have across the marketplace. We're going to try and minimize the impacts to the app catalog, but there are some things that you will have to think about as you build new apps, and perhaps even on your existing apps, you'll have to keep those in mind. And then, as you can imagine, because we're adding, we'll have a range of different devices from very high-end, like the, I don't know if they mentioned this earlier, but the Lumia 900 is a really nice high-end device, all the way down to the Lumia 610, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. So there's a very wide range of devices, and so that gives us a pretty competitive experience from where consumers can be able to choose from a range of devices. There are a number of new end user features. I'm not going to talk about them today other than to mention what they are. They're primarily related to messaging. In MMS, you can now do multiple attachments, multiple picture attachments. You can now do a video attachment. And then there's some additional things that we've done in voice notes and ringtones, which is interesting. So I'm not going to talk about any of those features because we're going to focus primarily on the developer experience. So we talked about marketplace expansion, and again, that's the primary thing we're trying to do with Windows Phone 7.5 refresh. That's the sort of the objective. And the first thing is the China developer market. So we're enabling developers in China to start developing apps, and so that increases the number of apps, and it increases the apps that are local to China as well. But more importantly for you is that there's 28 new consumer markets that we're adding, which increases our marketplace footprint substantially. And the result of that is more apps in more places. So again, China developer, that means China-specific experiences, which are important. And then also because we have more markets, there's more opportunity for you perhaps to do preloads if you're working with OEMs or mobile operators. So adding 23 markets is interesting, but it's kind of hard to understand. So I figured it'd be easier to do it sort of visually. And so let's look at the world from a couple of different perspectives. The green that you're seeing here is the developer markets. In other words, these are the markets where developers around the world can develop applications, publish to the marketplace, and get paid by marketplace as they develop those applications. And there's 38 of them around the world. There was 38 back in Windows Phone 7.5 in October, November, and that's kind of where we are. We haven't really added any new developer markets here. The other thing I would layer over that is that as of right now, Windows Phone 7.5 developer markets, these are where we have, the red and green is where we have what we call APS support. That's our advertising support. We have our own advertising offering, which is called PubCenter. And you can sign up for PubCenter and publish free apps that are advertising supported. And so these are the 16 markets around the world where you can publish advertising-supported apps and get paid from PubCenter. Now, over time, we want to increase that so that it covers all of the various markets, and we're going to do that slowly over time. So stay tuned on that. Let's talk about the consumer market. So if we look back to October, November of last year when we released Windows Phone 7.5, what most people refer to as Mango, we were at about 35 markets. So that's the orange that you see there, which is great. Even greater is that as of right now, with the new markets that we've added with Windows 7.5 refresh, we're now at 63 markets around the world. So you can see a lot of the gaps that were in the map a few seconds ago have now started to be filled in. Now, clearly, there's still more room, but I think you can see that we've increased the marketplace on the order of 60%. So the footprint, the number of consumers that are available for you to sell your app to or for you to have consumers download your app is an additional 60%, which is obviously a huge expansion that you're going to see over time. And then the last thing, I talked about this earlier, the idea of mobile operator billing. Right now, we're at six markets with nine mobile operators. You're going to see us expand that over time. So there you go. Any questions on that? Is that interesting? It's really quiet. First question. Congratulations. Yes. Good point. Do I need to repeat the question? Can you guys hear the questions in the back? Or I guess I need to repeat them for the streaming, right? Yeah, okay, so let me repeat the question. So the question was, what about PubCenter? It was only available locally as of about a month ago. Actually, I think it was maybe 2 months ago, but you're right. We have started expanding markets. We started with the US. wanted to make sure that the service was working properly and that we could do that. And then over time, we'll be adding additional markets all around the world. And so, yes, Austria just recently got added, along with a whole slew of other countries at the same time. And you'll see this expanding that, including expanding the inventory, right? As we have more consumers, that means you have more sockets, more empty places where you can put ads. That means you'll have more advertisers that will come, because the more spaces you have for ads, the more advertisers you have. And so over time, you'll see that expanding to more markets around the world. What was that, the question you were asking? Yeah, okay. Any other questions? Okay. So in order to address that larger marketplace, as I mentioned, we will need lower memory devices, and the primary impetus for that is that lower memory devices give us a lower price point, and that extends the reach of the platform down to people that perhaps in the past would not be able to purchase a smartphone because they're perhaps too expensive for them. And then obviously for you, that means that there's a new opportunity to sell apps and have those apps downloaded. We are changing a little bit the developer requirements, not really changing, but it does affect the things that you're doing, and I'm going to go into it, as much detail as I think you'll need to understand what that means. We are going to pre-screen the catalog to make sure that all the apps work on these lower memory devices, and we're also giving you some additional bits so that you can address this market. There's a new emulator, and then there's a new SDK. And the other thing that we're doing is we're allowing you to opt out. So if you decide that you don't want your app to be available on a lower memory device, perhaps you need more memory for your app, you can actually opt out. And we're going to run a one-time script to make sure that all of the apps in the catalog will actually work on these new memory devices. And then any time that we opt a device out, we'll actually give the developer guidance so that they can figure that out. Well, I'll talk about that more in a few minutes. The first thing is, as I said, we're going to pre-screen the existing catalog. We're going to flag devices for what we call a 256 meg opt-out, so there'll be a new flag. Those developers will be notified with recommendations. In fact, I think it's already happened. And we expect that about 5% of the apps in the marketplace will have some issue of one type or another with those lower memory requirements. We are providing updates to tooling. I mentioned this already. So you'll have a new emulator, there's a tools patch, a new documentation, as well as new guidance, some pretty detailed guidance to give you a sense of what you need to do. And then finally, you can opt out. As I said, it's a new thing that we've added. There's a new capability flag that you have for those of you that have already started building on Windows Phone. It's a new capability that you can add as to whether you want to opt in or opt out of the 256 meg devices. And of course, you will have to resubmit if you want to, if your app has been opted out and you want to opt back in, you have to resubmit for certification. So what does the consumer experience look like? You'll see in the catalog, all apps will be available to all devices. So even the lower memory devices will see all of the apps. For the apps that have been opted out for one reason or another, the consumer will see a little message that says, this app is not available for your device. Tap here for more info. And then when the user taps on that area, the little pop-up window will come down and say, this app requires a phone with more memory than the memory that's available in your phone, for instance, the Nokia Lumia 610 as an example. And then they click OK. So any questions on that in terms of the consumer experience and what's required there? Yes. So the question was, one of the things that lower memory devices can't do is they can't run background tasks. That's true, but very specific background tasks. And I'm going to get into the very details of what that means exactly and what that means in terms of your app. So stay tuned. Okay? There are not all background tasks don't work, only a couple of them. Okay? Any other questions? Okay, so let's talk about developer guidance and what that means. The first thing is, as I said, there's this huge opportunity for you as a developer because we've just increased your marketplace substantially. 23 new markets, 60% wider. But it does mean that you have to think about a couple of new things. For most developers, they don't have to worry about it. Most developers don't have issues with performance or don't have issues with memory requirements, but for some, they might. And so there's two things you need to keep in mind. One is that there's lower memory requirements for these lower end devices, and there's lower performance. So in order to have a lower price point, we've allowed the OEMs to build devices that have, you know, the difference between a Lumia 800, which has a 1.4 megahertz processor, sorry, gigahertz processor, and a Lumia 610, which has an 800 megahertz processor, is substantial. Most apps, not a big deal. Some apps may have a big deal. So you have to keep that in mind. Again, the opportunity, we saw this earlier. So the important thing is that there is more affordable hardware. And actually, the Nokia Lumia 610, I believe, was just announced this week, right? The Nokia guys are here still? Somewhere? Andreas? This was just announced this week, right? So this is now available. This is a pre-production device that I got. And in fact, if you want to come up during the break and have a look and play with it, you're welcome to do that. It's actually a really nice device. Nokia and Microsoft have done a pretty good job. We have done a pretty good job in optimizing the operating system to take advantage of that lower memory footprint and also the lower processor. And as you might expect, or you might expect that a device like this actually wouldn't be very performant, but in fact you'll find not only does it feel good and it works well, it's actually quite fast. It's fast and fluid. In fact, I was at, I'm on this seven-city tour around Europe right now, and I was at a nerd dinner in Stockholm last weekend, 2 weekends ago, and who knew there was nerd dinners, right? But I was at this dinner, and I handed this device over to a developer who's working on Android, and he played with it, and he was kind of surprised. He said, it's fast, right? Because on competitive platforms, lower-end devices are super slow, and they don't perform very well, and they stutter, and they run out of battery, and it's just not a very good experience. And what we didn't want to do is have an experience that was suboptimal. And so the experience that an end user will have with this device, because of some of the changes we've made to the operating system and changes to the requirement, is that they're going to get a really nice device. Yes, there are some things that will not work properly, as the gentleman mentioned. We'll talk about some of those in a few minutes. But the experience for the end user will be a very good one. And again, I encourage you to come and see it at the break and to play with it. You'll see that it's actually super fast, so you'll love that. I'm sure the Nokia guys will have to pay me for that commercial there. So what's different? So we've done a few things in the operating system. The first thing is that we did a substantial amount of tuning of the operating system. As you can imagine, the operating system just made this assumption that there was 512 meg of memory. That's no longer the case, so we've actually gone back and tuned our operating system so that it works well in that 256 meg of memory. We've also improved paging support so that when your apps are running, whether it's system processes, foreground apps that are running, or background apps that are running, we've improved the paging so that you just won't notice it. And it actually makes the experience from a developer point of view, in most cases, you won't see the difference. There are some cases, and we'll talk about what those are in a few minutes. But by doing those two things, that allowed us to release this OS that works super well on these lower-end devices. And as I mentioned, you actually feel it immediately on the Lumia 610. It actually feels pretty good. So we did a lot of the work. And because of all that work we've done, for the most part, the stuff that you've done, the apps that you've already built and published, will just work. There are some that don't. And so in order to figure out what those are, we did a substantial amount of testing. The first thing is we took a large cross sample across all of the apps and tried to figure out what were some of the corner cases that worked and didn't work. And based on that, based on downloads, also based on what APIs those apps were using, we then went across all of the top apps across all of the markets. And we spent months, literally months, manually automated testing, but also manual testing across all of those apps. And what we found is that 95% of the apps just work. There's no change required. They will just work on these lower end devices, which is great. Of course, the corollary of that is that 5% of the apps didn't work. And so for those apps, we've actually introduced a new flag. We call it the opt-out flag, which allows developers to opt out of lower memory devices. In addition to that, we've actually gone through all of the apps in the marketplace and opted out the apps that we think will not have a good experience on those lower memory devices. We figured out why they failed. We sent an email to all of those developers telling them, your app has been opted out, here's why it's failed, and here's what you need to do, given specific guidance. Here's what you need to do to fix those issues. And then developers can then submit updates to their apps so that they can opt back in to those lower memory devices. Consumers will not see that. All they will see is this experience that I showed you earlier, where if an app doesn't work, rather than give them an app that doesn't work and then crashes and all the bad stuff that goes with apps that don't work, we've actually given them a clear message that says, sorry, you just can't download this app. This flag, so the question was, when is this flag available? And the flag has been available for a few months. When we released the SDK, we had a preview of the SDK, and now we have a full version, an RTW version of the SDK, which is available. That's the Windows Phone SDK version 7.1.1.
But the flag was available at the marketplace when you...
No. This is a new flag that you have to... It's part of the new SDK. It was not available previously in 7.5. Okay, I think there was a question in the back. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Yeah, I'm going to give you some guidance and give you... So the question was, what are some of the things that cause apps to fail? And I'm going to get into some detail. I can't give you all of them because there are some corner cases, but I'll give you the biggest ones that will give you issues so that you can take advantage of the knowledge that we've gained so that you can adapt your apps. The first thing is that you now have a new SDK. And so when you install the new SDK, there is a new emulator that comes with that. And that allows you to simulate low memory conditions. And so you have the Windows Phone device, of course, that hasn't changed. But now you get to choose between Windows Phone emulator that gives you 512 meg or Windows Phone emulator that gives you 256 meg. And then obviously the emulator will give you the opportunity to test out the experience that a lower memory device like the Lumia 610 would give you. Make sense? I should mention, and this is the case both for 512 and 256 meg, the performance characteristics of running an app on an emulator versus running them on a device, whether it's a high-end device or a low-end device, is substantially different, right? A PC is going to have quad core, lots of memory, super fast, different screen and all that good stuff. So I encourage you to test on both devices and the emulator, especially when you're talking about low-end memory, right? Because this device is an 800 megahertz processor, and so that's very different than what you would see on a PC. So be sure that you test on both. The emulator, on the other hand, for memory is fine, right? You can test memory on the emulator, but performance is going to be a little different. So just a tip there. So what are some of the common issues? For the most part, guidance has not changed. The biggest problem will be memory. And so we've always had a certification requirement. It's requirement number 5.2.5 for those of you that have memorized the certification requirements doc. Okay, nobody's laughing at my jokes anymore. Okay. So the one thing that we've always said is that apps should never exceed 90 megabytes on devices that have less than 256, unless the device has more than 256 meg. Now, the thing is that up until now, all devices have had more than 256 meg, and so we have not been testing for that. So yes, the certification requirement was there, but we haven't been testing that. And so some of those apps that we're not perhaps doing or adhering to this have gone through certification. And those are the ones that, among others, those are the ones that have been opted out. The OS is now tuned to support apps up to 90 meg. If your app goes over 90 meg, it's going to crash. And so it's going to crash because we're going to throw you out of memory. Basically, the OS will check, and if an app goes over 90 meg, it will basically kick it out of memory. Now, of course, we do have a buffer, so some apps may spike over 90 meg and then come back down again, but if you go over 90 meg and you stay over 90 meg, you will crash, and so that's not a good experience. So keep that in mind, and I'm going to give you some guidance as to how you can check for that later on when we talk about optimization, performance optimization. So what do you do, right? So the primary issue is around memory. So how can you adhere to that? Well, there's three possible ways that you can do that. The first one is the easiest one. You do nothing. because that means your app is already working fine, whether it's 256 or 512. And that's where you kind of want to be. But of course, not every app is going to be there. And so for apps that have issues, there's two things you can do. One is you can basically turn off logic conditionally based on whether your app is running on a low memory device or a high memory device. And so you can check for that and just turn off features, right? Any feature that takes a lot of memory. We'll talk about what some of those are in a few minutes. And basically strip out that functionality so that you don't use too much memory. The other thing you can do is actually monitor your memory usage. Rather than monitor what device you're running on, monitor your memory usage and then turn off conditionally the features only when you start bumping up against that memory limit. And the way you would do that is to just monitor your working set. And the best thing to do is just use there's an API called device-extended-properties.getValue application working set limit. And that's the closest you'll get to the physical memory that's available to you to your app. And by doing that and checking what device you're on, you can basically, once you start bumping up against that, that's when you would conditionally do some things or not do some things. Does that make sense? Okay. So what are some of the things you need to think about? I think this relates to some of the question that was in the back there. What are some of the things that you should do? The first thing is keep in mind that the operating system is the same, but the processor is slower and you have less memory. And so one of the things you want to watch out for is make sure your startup time is fast and try and defer as many things as you can until after the app is started. And maybe this is something you didn't have an issue with on the 512 meg devices because the processor was faster. Maybe the memory was faster, you had more memory. This is something you'll need to revisit to make sure that your app starts up quickly. The other thing that we see is that, and this is something that we encourage developers to do, is to have transition between pages, right? The idea that motion gives your app a little bit more emotion and allows you to connect more with your end user. Things like the turnstile transition and all that stuff, those look really great, but those also take a lot of memory. And so you may want to conditionally turn those off if your app is starting to bump up against that memory limit. There's also two controls that might give you issues. The first one is the web browser control, and that's essentially where you would embed Internet Explorer directly in your app. And by doing that, you're essentially taking Internet Explorer and the working set from Internet Explorer and taking that into your app, which in many cases is fine, but if you go too far, that might bump you up above that 90 meg. And so there is a web browser task that's available that you can do that. And the difference there is that rather than embed IE in your own app, you actually use the launcher to launch IE, do whatever is required, and then the end user would have to come back to your app. And then by doing that, you're launching IE, you're using IE's working set, so you don't have to worry about that in your own app, and then you come back. Similar concern around maps control. And the maps control, again, there's the Bing Maps task, which you can use instead of the maps control. It depends on the scenario. I realize it doesn't work in every scenario, but for many it will work. And so if you do that, again, you use the working set limit of the Bing Maps control, Bing Maps app, rather than pulling that working set into your own app. And so that saves you a bunch of memory. The other thing you can look at is use fewer overlays or try and have less pins and so on in the overlays that you are using, perhaps moving to a scenario where you start grouping pins together so that you have fewer pins and use less memory in your apps. Any questions on this? Okay. So how do you test? Well, the easiest way to test, I'm going to give you some other ways to keep this stuff in mind, but the easiest way to test is to use the profiler. How many people knew that there was a profiler in Visual Studio? Okay, reverse question. How many people did not know there was a profiler? Everyone's too shy, right? Okay. Yeah, so we're going to spend maybe 45 minutes looking at the profiler later, and hopefully by the time you leave, you're going to be happy that you spent the day here, because the profiler is like a secret weapon that you're going to have that's going to save you a lot of time and effort. And basically, it allows you to do two things. It allows you to watch the performance of your app and see where there are performance issues, or to watch memory in your app and to see where your memory issues might be. And the profiler works on both devices and the emulator. I mentioned this earlier. If you're going to test for performance, you probably want to do it on the device because testing for performance on the emulator is not going to give you a real life example of what the performance issues might be in your app. So coming to the point that the gentleman made earlier in the front here, background agents have issues. The first thing I should say is that most of the background stuff still works. Things like running background audio, being able to play music while you're reading email, doing background file transfers, those all still work. Alerts or alarms still work. Reminders still work. So for those background tasks, you got nothing to do there. Those will just work. Just don't ignore the other stuff. There are generic background tasks, and those do not work in the lower end devices. So there are two specific types of tasks that we're talking about here. One is the periodic tasks, and the other one is the resource intensive tasks, or the resource intensive agents. These are just not available on the lower memory devices and the lower performance devices, just because there's just not enough memory to support all of these tasks running. This actually is not new guidance. We have always said that if you are using background tasks, don't take a dependency on these, because even on the higher end devices, the user can turn off your background agents. They can go into the control panel and say, turn off the background task for a particular app. Or the operating system can turn it off, because there's a limit to how many background tasks can be running, even on the higher end devices. It's limited to 18. And so if the end user installs app number 19 that requires a background agent, then it's going to turn off one of the other ones, right, as a first in, first out. And so you just can't have that dependency. Also, there's a limit into how long the background tasks run. They can only run for 14 days. And then if your app doesn't run again, that will just get turned off. So we have always said, don't take a dependency in your architecture of your app on background tasks, and code for the exceptions. And the exceptions are the same. It's the invalid operation exception. So if in your app you try to start a background task, you will get an exception that's the invalid operation exception. And that will be the same. You'll always get that in the lower memory devices, right? Because there are no background, generic background agents. On the higher memory devices, you will get that in the scenarios where perhaps the end user has turned off your background tasks, or there's just too many of them. And so you have to keep that in mind. Again, the guidance is not new, but you do have to keep that in mind. The place where I think background tasks are used the most is when you're updating live tiles. And so you have to think about new scenarios or new ways to update live tiles on your apps. And the primary way is probably to use push notifications to do the work on the server and then push the updated live tile to the device over the internet. That does require server infrastructure. There's no way around that, because you're going to do the work on the server. And that server could be cloud related, like I think Robert talked about Windows Azure earlier, and that's fine. Or it could be on Amazon, or it could be on a server under your desk at home, right? It doesn't really matter, as long as you can set up a server that tracks and does the work and then can push that notification to our push notification service, which will then take care of sending it to the device. There is another way to do it. The push notification, as the name implies, pushes the notifications to the device, but there's also something called the Shell Tile Schedule API, which is allows you to update the tile. Still requires a server, because you have to call out to a server to get the tile, but it works kind of the opposite in that it pulls the tile information from the server. So as you build these new apps, obviously you're going to publish them, and you will have issues because we will be you may have issues because we will be testing on these lower memory devices. As you can imagine, previously there were no lower memory devices, so we were not actually testing. But now that we do have them, devices that have not opted out of lower memory devices will be tested on the lower memory devices. And if your app doesn't meet the requirements, it will fail. We won't opt you out of the lower memory devices. Your app will just fail certification for both low and high memory. So keep that in mind. If you have issues with memory, keep that in mind before the certification step. So just to summarize, the first thing I think everyone should do if you haven't already done it is go and get the SDK 7.1.1 update. That's been available for a little while. It's right where you expect the SDK to be. Create.msdn.com, that's the app hub URL. And then keep in mind, for existing apps, you may have some additional work. Most people have no work to do, but certainly you'll want to check, especially if you're using generic background tasks. You want to make sure that you're handling the exceptions properly and that your app doesn't have a dependency on that background task. And if it does, you may want to opt out on the lower memory devices if your app doesn't work properly. And if we have opted you out, then you'll need to fix that and then resubmit for new certification so that you can opt back in. And definitely, no matter what, you should be testing with the profiler, right? I'm going to give you some hints on how to do that in a few minutes. And then for any new apps that you're building, keep this stuff in mind. Be mindful of how much memory you're using and how much performance you require in your apps, and then build that directly into your architecture as you're thinking through that. Any questions on that? There is some additional information. A really smart guy by the name of Mike Batista. He's the guy that spent a lot of the time doing all that manual testing that I said. Not him personally, but he's on that team. He's the program manager on that team. And he actually has a series of 4 or 5 blog posts that he's done. And so if you go to the first one, I put up a bit.ly link there. You can actually get to all of them from that first one. And that's some really good advice there. He goes into explicit detail in each one of the concerns that you need to do. And then there's also a video that they did with Mike and Larry Lieberman in the Inside Windows Phone podcast. It's number 33. And again, I've put up a bit.ly link for you. Any questions there? You guys are really quiet. Yes? The question is, will the slides be available? Absolutely, I'll make them available. Robert and I will figure out a way to make those available. They'll probably be available as PDFs that you can then download from somewhere, either somewhere locally in Austria or perhaps from my SkyDrive or whatever. We'll figure out a way. I think everyone who's registered, we have the ability to email them and tell them where, right? Robert, right? Okay. Any questions, additional questions? Okay, so I think at this point is the time for a break.